Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast.
Everyone has at least one good story.
And some of us have stories that are just to the left of normal.
We're interested in the ones that push the boundaries of what we can perceive.
Stories that defy explanations.
Stories with an air of mystery.
Stories we might not share.
For fear of being thought of differently.
But don't worry. We're all friends here. So, what's your weird story? Hello. Hey, everybody. How you doing? Welcome to the What's Your Weird Story podcast. I am Adam Beebe. As always, with me is my homie, Barry Johnston.
What is happening, man? Happy 2019.
Yeah, dude. Happy New Year. How's it going so far?
It's been, fairly uneventful, which I guess is good for me.
That's good.
I try not to let myself get too up, you know, or you know what I'm saying? Too far removed from myself in thinking that I'm going to change a bunch of stuff. You know what I mean? I've those days are past me.
So no resolutions.
But I do sort of have an honest discussion with myself about shit that I do need to get right. You know?
Yeah.
And yeah. I think that
I hear that.
That's more important than, because the resolution thing is kind of like the equivalent of people on Facebook thoughts and prayers. You know what I'm saying?
Yes. Yes.
That kind of shit. You know. So I think that taking that out of it, putting a little bit more, you know, time and effort into exactly what you're trying to accomplish for the year. Now, you're not always going to be successful, but I think it's important to keep moving forward, you know? So
agreed. Yeah, dude. Like, I don't know if I necessarily gave myself a resolution per se, but I definitely put myself, I'm trying to be more, you know, positive and to eat better and all those general things.
Right. Last year was a pretty remarkable year when you look back on it and you see what we were able to do with the podcast. You know, of course, you know, we've got more downloads than I ever thought would be imaginable.
Oh, yeah. Definitely.
I think we were over, you redid the stats for us, and it looks like we're well over 3,000 for the year. And, you know, we started in August, so that's pretty amazing. Yeah. And we had
that's the very last week of August.
Yeah. Yeah. So, yeah. I mean, so not even, you know, four, you know, ish.
Roughly 4 months. Yeah. Yeah, right. But quarter of the year. I mean, that's
pretty crazy.
It's
man.
Really cool, man.
And it's cool because we never really set out to, I mean, our discussion to start the podcast was literally a text message, you saying, "Hey dude, want to do a podcast?" And I was like, yeah, that sounds cool. And then, you know, 3,300 downloads later, it's like, that's cool. That's a cool thing, man. So we had some cool things happen. We had some great guests on and did some cool stuff, you know, went to the Bigfoot Festival and
definitely the highlight of my year last year and probably since the past couple of years was getting the podcast together up and running and just going, and how good it's been and how good of a team we are.
Yeah.
Just patting ourselves on the back here a little bit, but you know, that's, you know, it's cool. It's been really rewarding personally.
Yeah.
And we have each other to get the thing done, but we're thankful. And I think people are probably tired of us saying this by now, but we're thankful for everybody that's listening and downloads. Actually, we found this out over the holidays is that over 3,000, that's just downloads. We don't know how many people have just listened.
Mm-hmm.
So it could be, you know, a million, probably not. Could be more though.
Yeah, that'd be incredible.
It's been awesome, and it's been really encouraging, and it's, you know, and a lot of it has to do with our natural chemistry of just knowing each other forever and being friends. And that brings me around to today's guest, because we have two guests.
Yes.
And they are also a couple of guys who have been friends for a long time, and they've got some really cool stories. One of them is where they went on an adventure together, and then that's Micah and Gary are their names. And then Gary has some other adventures that he tells about. And Micah is just a font of knowledge that has no bottom. And I always enjoyed talking to Micah.
Yeah. Yeah, you can tell that he's a super smart dude.
Oh, dude. I've known Micah for a long time. I knew him from when I was in college at East Carolina University. We went to the same comic shop there. Mm-hmm. And also, I worked at the record store there, and he would come in. And when I worked at a movie place, he would come in there, and we'd always talk and stuff. And then when I worked at the comic shop that I eventually took over, he would come in there and he would hang out. We would talk for hours. We would, after hours, we'd sit there and watch movies. And Micah can lecture you on movies because that one, that was part of his job. He was a professor of literature and English, but he also did a lot of film stuff. And he could tell you just so many things and so many just incredibly obscure and bizarre things. And he's got other stories that he didn't even get into that I need to pry out of him because I don't think Micah realizes that they're weird.
Yeah. So. Right. Well, and these stories that are coming up are pretty cool, man. And
They are.
I'm just so glad that we got to get him on and his friend Gary and meet those guys. And it's going to be fun. I can't wait for the listeners to take a listen.
Well, let's stop being so long-winded about it all. And let's get into it, and let's bring our guest into the studio, the virtual studio. And we had a little bit of choppiness here at the beginning of the interview, but it smooths out. I just want to point that out to our listeners. We worked on getting it flattened out as best we could, so I'm sure Barry's done a great job. Without further ado, here is Micah and Gary. So, Micah, Gary, what's your weird story?
Okay, this is going back maybe in the 1990s. I recently was employed at Pitt Community College from like 91 till this past spring. And I don't know how it came up, as these things I would bring up in class that had nothing to do with the lesson. But this student of mine, this girl, told me that between Greenville, North Carolina, where we live, and Washington, North Carolina, where Gary lives, what's that little town there, Gary?
Bethel.
No, not Bethel. Grimesland? No. I don't know. There's a little town there.
Yankee Hall?
No.
There is a Yankee Hall, actually. There.
Okay.
That's one of those. But it's a little place there, and she said there's a haunted house there. Right? There's a house that's haunted.
Stokes.
So I don't know exactly how we got the bearings. Come to think of it, I don't know if we even went to the right house.
Turns out it had to be,
but it turned out pretty weird anyway. So Gary and I went to this house, you know, to investigate, you know. So we pull up, and Gary gets out, right? And he gets out, and he's going to ask, and I see a dog, right, coming up. And I don't know what the deal with this dog is, but, you know, I'm going to err on the side of, I'm staying in the car, right? And so this dog's out. Gary's already out there where the dog is. So I'm, like, you know, trying to motion. We don't have cell phones. We don't, you know, anytime I get caught. So I'm, like, motioning, and I guess say a dog or whatever, right? And Gary never understands what I'm saying, right? So he ducks into the house, all right? He goes into the house, and correct me if I'm wrong on this, Gary, because I was sitting in the car where it was safe. And he goes in the house, and he said the house was totally cleaned out, right, Gary? Just stripped bare.
Yeah.
And you open a door, right, like a closet? Was it a closet door?
Let me get him from here. Let me see. Can my avatar speak?
Yeah, of course.
I want my avatar to speak for me. Yeah, hello, guys. No, but anyway, what had happened was Micah drives up, and I'll add some that I felt like he was leaving out because it, you know, kind of be unclear. But anyway, we drive up, and it's beside the house, and it's an old farmhouse, two-story farmhouse. Mm-hmm. But it looks like it's recently been...
Well, it's not an old house.
It looks like somebody...
I don't remember being two stories. I remember being one. It was
two stories.
It looked like a regular, you know, Brady Bunch house almost. I mean, just like a regular...
It was wood, though.
There was nothing particularly creepy about it, right?
Yeah.
Suburbia in the...
Anyway, what happened, you pulled up beside the house, and I said, well, I'm going to go... I'd gone into, you know, we're in rural, you know, we're in a, you know, country area, so there's a lot of houses. When I was growing up in the country, I used to go with my, you know, my mates, and we would go investigate houses, you know, and try to find stuff in them, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
But so I was used to doing that, you know, as a kid. So
breaking and entering, I think.
Well, you know, and that's the thing that I said to Mike. I said, I'm going to go check the front door, and it may be locked, but I said often in these cases the back door is unlocked. Mm-hmm. You know, so if I find that the front door is locked, I'll go around the side of the house and come in through the back door if it's unlocked. And he said, okay. And that was the plan. So he was going to wait in the car, and I was going to go around to the side. If I came in to the car was beside the living room is what we were thinking. And I would just go to the window and I would motion for him to come in. So, we agreed. So I come to the front porch and I'm checking the door on the front porch. And that's when Micah starts motioning to me. So he's like pointing at something beyond the car, which I can't see. And he's saying, he's mouthing it because he's across from where you can turn the car and you get the window to come down. So he's mouthing it, but there's a glare on the window and I can't see what he's mouthing. The only thing that I'm seeing is that he's pointing and I'm thinking he's saying, try the back door.
Oh, okay.
He's saying dog.
But by the way, Gary never sees the dog.
Yeah, I'm thinking he's saying door, but he's saying dog.
And he never saw the dog.
So the way that the house is set up, you know, just by the growth and everything, bushes and stuff, it's easier for me when I come off the back porch, I mean the front porch, to go around the side of the house that's away from the car. So he's pointing at where he's seeing a dog, and I'm going around the other side of the house. So I come up to the back of the house and the porch and everything, and Mike is right. I never saw a dog at all. No dog. So I come in on the back porch, and sure enough, the door's unlocked. So I come into the house. First thing that grabs my attention is, like he said, that house has been stripped clean. I mean, the plates for the light switches, anything from the kitchen, the ceiling lights, place has been stripped clean.
Anything that was bolted that wasn't bolted down. Yeah.
It was like people who had got a house to, you know, rent to own, and they decided they had put about 3 years of rent into the house, and now they were going to leave, and decided to take everything with them. But anyway, it was gone. It was stripped clean. So I go into the living room, and I can see Micah. So, you know, I bang on the window. I get his attention, and, you know, I'm motioning him to come around the back and come in, and he's still pointing. He's still pointing. So finally he reaches over and he turns the ignition enough to make the window come down. And he said, now I can hear him. He's going, there's a dog. There's this big dog back here. He said, I think we should leave. And
dog scared.
All right. So hold on, Micah.
Yeah.
Do you remember what the dog looked like? Can you give a description of the dog?
You know, I can't, other than he looked like a dog, kind of like he was somebody's dog. It wasn't like he was a stray. Yeah, he looked like he was a breeder. He was well kept. He may have just been wandering the neighborhood. But obviously, when you're on somebody's property where you're not supposed to be, you know, and a big dog comes up.
Oh, yeah.
Good indication to me. You ought to leave.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, so. Decent enough. He wasn't snarling or acting mean, but I didn't want to, you know, engage him in any particular, give him a chance to get mean. You know, I just thought discretion's 9/10 of valor, you know?
Exactly.
I'm staying where I am.
Yeah. Hey, I would have been right there with you, I think.
So. Yeah.
So, but me not. I mean, it's, I mean that. So, it's, but I think I did leave the back door, I mean, open. So anyway, Mike tell me, we ought to leave. I think we should leave. And I'm thinking, okay, I'm in the house, but now that I'm here. One of the things that even as a kid, when I used to explore abandoned houses, I would always get some keepsake, you know, some little memento or something, you know, for my adventure. you know, to say, okay, you know, whenever I look back at it, I say, okay, I had this adventure, I was there, this happened, whatever. So I'm thinking, I'm not going to come into this house without taking something from it. I'm going to have a keepsake from this adventure. So I tell Mike, I said, I'm going to run upstairs real quick and I'll be back. You know, and so I go upstairs, I'm looking around. I think there's like three rooms up there or something like that, a landing, three rooms. And I'm looking through them quick and all this kind of stuff. And I come to what appeared to be like a children's room. And I'm saying that because somebody had taken crayons and had drawn all over the wall. And this time I really wish, because I'm a painter and an illustrator on the side, so I wish we had had cell phones at that time, because I would have liked to have taken pictures of the images on the wall. But, you know, alas. So I'm looking around in there, and again, nothing's upstairs, stripped clean. Open the door, the closet door, and there's this card that's sitting on the floor. And that's it. The only thing is just this card sitting on the floor, and I pick it up. And first thing that goes to my mind, my keepsake, you know, my memento. So anyway, I pick up the card, I look at it, and it's a small card. It's, you know, not like the size of a playing card. It's a little smaller. And there's this owl on it, illustration of an owl. And I'm looking at it, and of course, we're both big Twin Peaks fans. Right. And the first thing that pops in my mind is I go, oh, the owls are not what they seem. And I'm thinking, Micah's going to love this, you know. And so I get the owl downstairs and said, I got something to show for the adventure. Go downstairs, and you know, now I'm remembering he's talking dog. So I come out of the, you know, first, you know, I go to the back porch, I look out, you know, I'm looking all around, and I don't see a dog. So I kind of, you know, make some scruffle noises on the porch to see if I can, you know, make the dog come so I can shut the door, the back door, and go out the front door. And no dog and everything. So I, you know, go out, and I'm like, where the hell's the dog? So anyway, I go around the house, I get back into the car, and I'm like, I said, I didn't see a dog, man. And he's like, well, it was there. Yeah, and he doesn't lie. I can vouch for Mike.
He
doesn't even tell Mike. He doesn't fib. He saw a dog, but I didn't see a dog. But anyway, but I said, I didn't see a dog, but I did find this. And I hold up the card, and he looks at the card, and he says, the owls are not what they seem. So I said, so true, so true.
Yeah, no. So, yeah. Now, okay, well, let me... I just, again, a lot of your listeners may be familiar with this already or not, but the whole owl thing, the whole owl mythology, and the whole thing behind the owls are not what they seem, which became one of the key phrases in the Twin Peaks series, but it wasn't original with those guys. They cribbed it from Whitley Strieber, who famously did Communion, and he introduced the idea that when, you know, UFO abductees were taken, that the images of the aliens were masked by images of owls, right? Mm-hmm. And one of the things in the second season of Twin Peaks that kind of gets skipped over a lot, that was very interesting and unique with them, was that they followed, and this would have been David Lynch's co-creator Mark Frost bringing this in, because he's done a lot of occult, I think, research and things and readings. There is an occult explanation for UFOs, or at least something that is not the standard, you know, close encounters of the third kind, beam me up, mothership, nuts and bolts thing. In fact, one of the leading guys, the leading man on ufology, J. Allen Hynek, who worked with Project Blue Book, and his protege, Jacques Vallée. Hynek was the one that gave you the close encounters classifications.
Right.
He was the advisor on close encounters. The French actor, who was a director, right? Isn't that the famous? Yeah, who plays the Frenchman in Close Encounters? He was a homage to Jacques Vallée, I believe. The irony is, Vallée is totally opposed to the version of UFOs that Close Encounters was promoting. He believes that it's some parallel reality. He traces it back to things like fairy lore. He talks about how the things reoccur, like abduction of hares, UFO abduction, missing time, crossbred babies.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense.
Yeah, that's a lot unfair. And he says his theory is And it's interesting, if you get to the when the Twin Peaks The Return came out, Mark Frost did two tie-in books. The first one, which you were getting able to get pretty cheap at Barnes & Noble, if you run down and get it, it's really good. He's very into the UFO stuff. Frost is, not so much Lynch. And there's a passage in there where one of the characters is talking about. I thought, this sounds like he's paraphrasing Jacques Vallée, what he's saying here. And but basically, Vallée's idea was that these entities, you know, alongside humans in this parallel dimension, I would say they're out and out demonic. Vallée doesn't. But he says, you know, they sort of key themselves to what the current technology is. Mm-hmm. So when people are more rustic, you know, you got the fairy lore and mushroom circles and stuff. But when you get technological, you know, then they start giving this kind of technological stuff. And he's got some good books like Dimensions and Revelations, where he goes through and basically makes the case these things are not from outer space. It doesn't make sense, right? Mm-hmm. So Twin Peaks went in that direction. They were going into an occult explanation for UFOs because they brought in Project Blue Book and all these elements, mm-hmm. getting really interested. And then, unfortunately, they stumbled along in the mid-season before they got back on trail, and it got good again. But on the other hand, I don't know if they stumbled as they were just subtle, you know, which is one of the cool things about Twin Peaks is not spoon-feeding you everything and all. But that's how the owls are not what they seem got carried over into Twin Peaks, was from the UFO stuff and then this occult notion. Yeah. Yeah, so you got this whole thing about owls, right? So years pass, and some of the you guys seen the movie The Fourth Kind?
I think so.
It is a creepy movie that you can probably get on Blu-ray for like $4. But I saw it in the theater, Adam, there in Goldsboro.
Okay.
And I thought I was watching some real, I mean, it was like, it's kind of a take on the Blair Witch kind of thing.
Yeah.
But they really psych you at the beginning because that actress, Mila Jovovich or something.
Yeah.
She comes out at the beginning and says, I'm Mila so-and-so, and I'm, you know, and then they have footage where, like, the screen halves, and you're supposed to be looking at the actual footage.
That's right.
It was creepy, man. Right. But it's a supposedly about cases. You find it never happens. All of fake.
Yeah.
But UFO abductions in Alaska.
And yes. Okay.
All right. So now I'm going to turn you back over to Gary, who picks up. All right, now we've got the cultural story of UFOs and the occult background. So what happens next when Gary moves down across the straight state down the road from UFO country?
Barry, you just had an example of one of the main reasons I wanted to have Micah on here, because Micah knows a lot of cool stuff about a lot of cool stuff.
It's awesome.
And we always had the most incredible conversations there at the comic shop.
I'm going to get business cards printed up that says esotericist.
You need that. You're absolutely that.
If you want to know anything useless, I'm your guy.
Mike is your guy.
No practical purpose. Yeah,
that's great.
But it's true. Yeah, our allegedly true. Yeah.
So we want to try an experiment. We want to get stories from you, the listener, for us to read on air.
What we're saying is, if you don't feel comfortable being interviewed on air, you can type up your story and send it to us, and we will have it read, and we'll share your story that way.
It'll be a cross between us telling your story and our reactions to your story.
So what we'll probably do is have a third party read your stories, and we'll react as we typically do.
And we want to try this as an experiment. It's an idea that we've come up with.
Now, granted, we can't ask you the questions we would normally ask someone who is involved in the story, but we may have our reader just make up stuff.
That could be part of the charm.
And it's a little silly, but we're going to try it, and it'll be fun.
Gary, Gary will take the narrative. It's his story from here on out.
Cool.
Okay, so we jump forward. I found a card and it's cool and everything, and you know, and that's it. And like Micah said, I've moved across state, And I'm living in Franklin, North Carolina. No, yeah. Excuse me, Waynesville. I moved a lot. I moved a lot in like 7 years. So I'm in Waynesville, North Carolina. And I moved from there. And then I moved to Canton, North Carolina. And then I moved from there to Clyde, North Carolina. So I'm there. And I'm watching what he said. I was thinking it was white noise, but it's the fourth dimension.
That was the fourth kind.
The fourth kind. I wonder why I was thinking white noise.
That's another movie that wasn't that good with Michael Keaton.
Okay.
Anyway, the trailer.
Just a wealth of knowledge, man.
I tell you, man.
Yeah, I can't. Yeah. Yeah.
The trailer for White Noise, it creeped me out. It'll creep you out. And then you see the movie, you know, and it's just like Michael Keaton. And you just not, it's not that. And but the trailer was freaky.
Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
So it's the fourth. I'm glad you told me that.
Guy.
Yeah.
Got it on my shelf.
Wow. So anyway, years later, I'm watching The Fourth Kind, and I'm just sitting there watching it one night in my house, in this farmhouse I'm living in, and the telephone rings. At this time, I've got a landline, and I pause. I'm watching a DVD player, and I pause it, and I get up to answer the phone, and there's this squalling noise on the phone. I would say that it's similar to a fax machine when somebody, you know, tries to call somewhere and they get a fax number. It was sort of like that, but I don't know if you guys have ever heard Lou Reed's Metal Machine music. It's kind of more like Lou Reed's Metal Machine music.
Okay,
is what the sound was like, and so I'm hearing a pattern in the noise. So I'm trying to stay with it, hoping that something will come with this noise, you know. So I keep saying hello, hello, and then I listen, and I'm like hello, hello, and on top of that, I'm kind of intrigued by it because it sounds like Lou Reed's Metal Machine music, and I like that. So I'm listening, and it finally just stops, and I go, well, that was weird, and I put the phone down, and I go back to the couch to sit down and start the movie again. And I look down on the floor in front of me, and lo and behold, there's that card. Now, I have not seen that card in four moves, actually. And suddenly, this card appears.
That's a Twin Peaks moment right there. That's a Lynchian kind of a thing.
Yeah.
That was, and I was living alone, and
and he's watching a movie about owls and UFO abductions.
I'm watching a movie about owls and UFO abductions.
Scene with the phone in the
And, well, the thing that comes to mind, I can't remember if there's a scene in the movie, but the thing that came to mind immediately was John Keel and what had happened with the whole Mothman prophecy stuff. And if you guys have ever seen the Richard Gere movie that was based on the Mothman prophecies. Uh-huh. But anyway, that's immediately what it came to mind, because that happened in Point Pleasant, West Virginia, prior to the bridge collapsing and all of that. You know, that was a strange phenomenon that went on there. And so I had been reading that John Keel book, so that's what immediately came to mind when it happened. So I went and got the book and everything, and I thought that I put it in there. I said, Micah's going to love this, you know, because it's just too strange, you know, to have that card.
Micah is smirking very largely in the background here now.
So
this is one for the files.
This is one for the files.
Memoirs to prove the existence of the devil.
This is our blue rose case. But anyway, so I decided I'm going to put the book, put the owl card in the book, you know, in the John Keel book. What's it, Bean something? Strange Beans?
That's one of them.
That's one of them. Yeah, that's the one I put it in. So anyway, to have it as a remembrance, I'm like, how to get on the floor? And then the other is, what kind of message was being transferred to me through this call, and why? And so since then, I've moved closer back. I've moved twice since then as well, and I cannot, try as I may, I cannot find that card. I've had a friend who's been looking it up, trying to find the card online because it looked like it was a children's card. It looked like it would have been a game or something because there's no word, number, or anything. It was just a picture of an owl on the card, and that was it. So I put that up and have not been able to find the card since. I am still wondering when I will find, or if I will find the card again, or if a phone will ring and I will, you know, and there's also that fear within me that something was transmitted to me like Montauk or something that, that I've been programmed in some strange way.
Right.
And that I'm going to be keyed at some point in the future to do something horrendous, you know, and I'm hoping not, but then to take it further from that is I was, there's a friend of ours, Jonathan Claiborne, and he started a group in this area called Haunted Pamlico. And the reason he started a group is there's so much weird stuff that happens around this area. He decided to investigate it. You know, whenever somebody, you know, brought up something or, you know, he would go and check it out. So, and now it's since has evolved into short films. Haunted Pamlico is now these, you know, like short films that they create about strange stuff. But it's kind of.
They do have a website.
And they we'll do have a website. And, yeah, you could go, or Facebook, a Facebook page. Yeah, and see all the videos they've created and all this kind of stuff. Okay. And a lot of it's fun. You know, a lot of it's played for laughs. But, you know, it's still got a good cinematographer now, Justin Casey. But anyway, Jonathan, when he had first done Haunted Pamlico, he was telling me of a strange incident that had happened with he and his sidekick, Crystal. And they had learned, somebody had told them about a haunted house in the Stokes area, and they were going to go check it out. They decided, unlike Mike and I wanting to go in broad daylight, that they were going to go at dark or, you know, late at night. So if the house was, you know, a no trespasser, they could go in there and not be seen, you know, because, you know, the farmers would normally go to bed at sunset and they could just go, you know, move around the house without being run off, you know. So they show up, I guess, around midnight, and he's describing the house. And at first, you know, so I asked him, I said, wait a minute, I described the house. I said, Jonathan, I said, I think Mike and I have been to that house. And I said, I've got a story for you. I said, but go ahead with your story, because I was going to see if he found a card in the house.
Right. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
I was just going to see what he had to say.
Card for everyone.
Yeah, you know, a card for everyone. But, you know, who knows what his card would have been. Right, it's kind of interesting to think. But his story is that he and Crystal, they drive up to the house. They find it. It's dark. It's around midnight. And they pull up beside the house, just like Mike and I did. And they didn't notice it coming up to the house, but when they pull up into the house and turn their headlights off, they're noticing a blue glow behind the house, like it's in the yard behind the house. And they're like, what the heck is that? Because they didn't notice it driving up to the house. So, you know, they're like, what the heck is that?
I think we're all at that point right now. It's like, what the heck is that?
Yeah. So they decide to not get out of the car. They're a little freaked at this point. So they decided that they're going to ease up. They're going to start the car up with the lights out, and they're going to ease up to the back corner of the house so they can look at whatever the blue glow is without having to, you know, commit to actually getting out of the car and walking over there. So they do that. They ease up to the back of the house, and they said what it is a blue flame that is like a fire, but it's blue. And the first thing that Jonathan said crossed their mind was, what on earth do you throw into a fire to make it turn blue? You know, he was like, you know, because it wasn't like a fire that was about to go out. He said it was a good sized fire, like, you know, a campfire, a rather large campfire. He said, but it's blue. And he said that, you know, immediately as they're thinking out, what the hell turns a fire blue? They start noticing these robed figures moving around the blue fire.
So,
that's not like,
holy shit.
It's incredulous. But anyway, one thing, I trust Jonathan as well. I know him because he was a newspaper writer for our daily news. So he is always, you know, he was part of the voice of the Pamlico.
Right.
And, you know, he would go out and, you know, and do interviews and stuff. So I completely trust Jonathan on this, but he said they see these characters, these people, you know, kind of going around this this fire and everything. And he said they, right as they saw them, it's they look back. So he said they're seeing the guys in the robes, and then the guys who are in the robes, they immediately look at them like they catch at the same time. And then, you know, there's that oh shit moment.
Yeah.
It's like, oh crap, you know, they've seen us. So they didn't do anything. You know, Jonathan said in retrospect, it wasn't like they all pulled out daggers, you know, and started running towards them or something. He said it was just they had the fear, you know, when they saw those people and the people all just stopped in unison and turned to look at them.
Not to mention a blue flame.
And I'm looking at, none of that of itself, you know, could be considered as threatening, violent, or whatever. But the
country folks having a hoedown, that's all.
You know, whatever it is. I mean, you know, if it had been like, you know, if it had been, what's his name, Mulder or something, you know, hey, what are you guys doing? You know,
yeah.
He would have brought, but, you know, Jonathan and Crystal, they're like, oh, crap. And they immediately put it in reverse and just shot out of there, backed up with their lights off and took off. And that was their story. So I told Jonathan, I said, well, I'm really feeling the need to go back to that house now. and he said, well, he said, it would be nice. He said, but the house is burned. He said, it's gone. And, and it was, yeah. And he said, he and Crystal, they built their nerve. A couple of weeks later, Crystal was actually the one who said, I'd like to go back to that house in the daylight and just look at it and take some pictures, because for the Haunted Pamlico, they had not done a story yet. They had had the experience, but they hadn't documented it. So Crystal wanted to go back for the documentation and at least take some pictures of the house. So when they did do their story, you know, here's the house and everything. So they had just put it off. They're, you know, busy people. And they went back to where the house was, and it was burned. It was just the foundation of the place was sitting there. So then later, after he told me that, I told my another friend, a mutual friend, who actually went with me to Point Pleasant, because we got intrigued by the Mothman thing. We wanted to go and talk to locals ourselves and learn some other interesting things about Point Pleasant that's not in anybody's documentation that I know of, but you can find it on YouTube. But about the Lowe Hotel that's across from the Mothman Museum. It's a haunted motel, and it goes back to the late 1800s, and it's a very well documented haunted hotel. And I didn't know about it until I got to Point Pleasant, but then I went on YouTube and started, you know, sniffing around and finding out all this stuff where people had done their documentation, and these you know, professional ghost hunters had set up their equipment, and they had picked up some activity. But anyway, my friend who had gone with me, Roman Leary, to Point Pleasant, he wanted to go to the foundation where the house was. And I was kind of keen on that as well, because I wanted to you never know what you're going to find, you know, and the ashes. I didn't know if something would pop up in the ashes or something. You know, I'm always, you know, for he who has eyes to see, let him see. I'm that type of person. Yeah. I feel like if you go looking for stuff, inevitably you're going to find something.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, so yeah. I said, okay, yeah, let's go find the house.
That don't mean you'll like it when you find it.
Yeah.
So that's a very big thing to take into consideration. You know,
you can go
poking around a snake's, you know, a snake hole. Don't be surprised if you find a snake. Yeah. You know, then it's gonna bite you.
Yeah. Yeah.
But you know, yet instill in all of this, I wasn't threatened by anything. You know, I was more intrigued than threatened. So I wanted to I wanted to go back and just, you know, and kind of rummage through the remains of what was there. Who knows, you know? And so I take my friend back, and what do you know? The house has completely been plowed under, and there is a field there. There is no evidence other than a driveway that there was ever a house there at all. Totally gone. So that closes that chapter, you know, on that. Other than I'm still, and even prior to this, when Micah told me about this podcast, you know, because I'm still, you know, when do you ever get totally moved into a new place? I mean, I live in a library, right? Yeah. I mean, I'm a book hoarder.
Yeah.
And so, I'm still going through, when Micah told me about this, I was still going through boxes And any book, any Edgar Casey book, Aleister Crowley book, any book that I had in my library, Golden Dawn book, whatever, I'm going through all those books, you know, Whitley Strieber, any book that I have that would, I would in my right mind say, oh, the owl card should go here.
Yeah.
You know, all my Twin Peaks books, cannot find that card. I was looking for it, and I'm still at that point. When is that card going to show up, why?
It's going to.
Yeah, why did it disappear?
Oh, it will.
It's going to. I think it will.
Yeah. But I don't know. You might have an end of 2001 moment where it shows up, you know?
So he's looking at himself, and he's 80 years old. Big baby.
Well, which this is, I guess it's kind of an interlude or something, a kind of veer off the past. But this this doctor with whom I work, he remembers, we were talking about Montauk, and he grew up in that area out on Long Island. And at that point in time, the general consensus for those who are conspiracy theorists, they believe that the more, you know, the elitist of our society, the doctors and the, you know, the lawyers and the real thinkers, you know, in our culture, when the Woodstock generation was coming along, and, you know, and everybody was trying to decide whether they were going to tune in, turn on, and drop out, or if they were going to, you know, not, the professionals at that time did not want their children, their up-and-coming children, to get caught up in that whole Woodstock generation thing. So the mythology of it, our new cultural mythology, is that these professionals would take their children to Montauk to have them conditioned and programmed to become overachievers, you know, to not succumb to that, you know, that type of thing. And I often wonder if the doctor with whom I work went through that, because he is extremely brilliant, but he's also an extreme overachiever. And one of his, and I asked him about that, you know, one time I said, you think you were part of the Montauk experiment? And he just kind of glibly said, I don't know. You know. So, but
I would like to reopen that experiment in the community college system, that I to get a few overachievers programmed.
Yeah.
It'd be amazing, wouldn't it?
Great to see that.
Maybe it should be reintroduced into our society.
Maybe.
But his thing was that I asked him, he believes that he had been abducted, because this is another phenomenon that people talk about. Is that this town? I forget the name of it. Long Island, towards the end of it. He would walk home from school, and he would cut through this graveyard to get from, you know, this side of the street to his house, which was across the graveyard. Instead of walking all the way around the graveyard, he just cut through it. And he remembered that on one day he was getting ready to cut through the graveyard, and the next thing he remembers, he's in front of his house. And he has no recall of cutting through the graveyard. Now, of course, you know, a lot of us can ride from, you know, like one town to the next, and, you know, it's like, what's memorable about
it?
You know, unless, you know, and not, but if you went from a 20-minute drive, and all of a sudden you've left your driveway and you're at your destination and you can't recall anything that happened at all, you would normally know that.
Sure.
And he did. So he was determined, you know, he was convinced that he had been abducted and something happened. Now, the only other thing that he talks about, which he's adamant about it, is he was in his, you know, this, of course, there's jokes galore that could happen here, but he was in his shower one morning, and as he's taking a shower, above the shower head, this mist starts forming, and he sees his face coming through this mist, and it's like, you know, there's like a portal there or something, and he's seeing this face on the other side of this portal, and it's talking to him, but it's animated. It appears to be warning him, trying to, you know, tell him something that's very important, and he can't make it out. He can't understand what they're saying, and he said it's an old guy, this old man. And he's looking at him, trying to figure out, and then the mist goes up and the face disappears. And he never knew what the message was. So, you know, I asked him about that, and I said, do you have any idea? And he said, well, it happened about 20 years ago. He was practicing down at Daytona Beach. He said, it happened about 20 years ago when I was down there. And he said, he looked familiar, you know, and this guy's, he's Sicilian, you know, and he's got these characteristics like all the rest of his family. And he said he looked familiar, but he said, I'm like, you know, he said, I started thinking about my uncles and, you know, all the people in the family. And he said, I couldn't put him together. He said, 20 years later, he said, I know who it is. He said, it's me. He said, it's me older. He said, because now, he said, I can look in the mirror.
Wow.
He said, I couldn't have envisioned myself 20 years ago looking like I look now. And he said, and it was me.
Whoa.
That's probably older than I am now.
Now if it was me, I would just call it a plumber. Yeah. What is coming through my pipes? This is a digital portal.
You're pissing the old me off. Wow.
Cosmic Reno here.
Yeah. That's crazy, yeah. Man.
But Gary mentioned his the Aleister Crowley book that he had.
Yeah.
Adam, I know you're familiar with my graphic novel, Heaven's War. Right? Yep.
Yeah.
That's some original art from it. You still have that?
I do.
Tell me you haven't sold that on eBay.
Oh, no. I never will. Never will.
Hey, it's worth a lot now.
Oh, is it? Well, maybe I will then. No, I wouldn't.
But Gary was my my Crowley expert consultant when I was writing that because he'd read a lot. We're not followers by any means, but just in terms of reference.
Yeah, absolutely.
And following, picking his brain to see if I was, you know, what would Aleister Crowley do? That's a weird
That's a t-shirt idea.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, Micah, there could have been millions right there. Micah, that could have been millions.
But no, like when I was writing the character, you know, I wanted them to be, you know, true to Crowley, you know, even though I certainly don't agree with his position on things, but I want to give him a right representation.
Yeah.
And so Gary was my my go-to guy on that, on Heaven's War.
That's amazing.
So does any of this bring up any question or
man,
anything from you guys?
I want to go back to the house real quick. Did you ever find...
We all do.
Yeah.
It's as far as the driveway, apparently.
Right. Did you ever find out how the house burned? Or is that just a mystery?
That's common around here.
Okay.
Farmer, yeah. If once you abandon a house, because mm-hmm. I think there's some legal issues if somebody goes into your house, even if you have a no trespassing sign and they get hurt in the house,
there can
be legal ramifications. Yeah. I remember my grandmother's house when it became abandoned. Normally you're approached by the local volunteer fire department.
Okay.
You know, and they say, hey, we'd like to burn your house, you know, to teach our guys how to, you know, work with fire, you know, to put it out or whatever. So
especially that elusive blue flame.
That's what I was thinking, man.
That's what I thought.
I thought maybe one of those guys maybe set fire to it or something.
And I don't know. I haven't checked any records. I mean, I haven't, you know.
While we were talking, I've never really thought about it, but I think the thing to do if anyone was so inclined would be to research that house in local newspapers and things, see did anything happen there. You know, could you find a deed of records to see who owns the land, who used to live there?
Right.
You know, what's the story? Is there some event? You know, I never thought to ask my student at the time, you know, hindsight's 20/20, 25 years later, you know, why is this house supposedly haunted?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
It's just like, why are people saying it's haunted? What are the stories? So if she knew that,
right,
other people have got to have some kind of story going on about this.
And somebody told Jonathan
about this house. So yes, Jonathan, if anybody had the inclination, I don't have enough time to, you know, pick Lynn out of my navel, you know, as far as, you know, investigating this stuff. But it would be an interesting thing, you know, for somebody to look into if you were, you know, had world enough in time or whatever to look into it.
Yeah, that's cool.
Yeah, that is. And in fact, I'll see Jonathan tonight. They're putting on a Christmas presentation, this theater that they just created called A Cracked Christmas. So I'll actually be able to ask him about it tonight.
Cool. Well, hey, you know, if you wouldn't mind, tell him about us And I don't know if Mike, if you're going longer. Well, but tell him about us. And if he feels like, you know, if he wants to contact us and be on the show, we'd love to talk to him about this or any of these other things that he's done. And, you know, that'd be fantastic because we're always looking for, you know, new people to talk to, new guests.
He's so
that
good.
Sounds to be really great.
Yeah, and he's got like a great radio voice. He's one of these crooners. He's a singer. You know, he'll sing you some Frank Sinatra if you want him to. But he's really good. You know, and he's got a lot of stories. I mean, he was like Micah said. He's a guy who does have the time. To be able to go and do some legitimate investigating.
Right.
And he has in the past. So
that's cool.
Yeah. That's it.
Another thing I was going to comment on is when you're talking about your doctor friend, how he had that missing time and how you were saying, you know, you can get on autopilot if you're doing something, if it's routine, you know, you're driving somewhere and you drive that same drive 20, 30 minutes a day, every 5 days a week or whatever to go to work or not, you kind of get on autopilot. But like, I had a case of missing time when I was in college and there is the reason that it stands out is because you don't have that routine feeling. You have there's something that is different and you're aware of the difference, but you don't know what it is. You just know that this is a different kind of experience. Mm-hmm. It's like, you know, I can't even describe it fully. It's just, it was very confused and disoriented. And like, then I came back, you know, came back to reality, quote unquote, and just like, you know, realized where I was. But also, you know, I know that there's something that was not quite right in the universe that had happened before. And, you know, I don't know if I was abducted. I don't know what it was. I just know that I'm aware that I have a gap of time that is somewhere between 6 and 7 minutes that I can figure. And I can only judge that on because I was listening to a song on a cassette tape, and I know that song is about 6.5 minutes long. So, yeah, that was one. I told the story on an earlier episode.
What was the song?
It was a song. it was a Flaming Lips song. Wow. And which is very
beside him, the lead singer in Asheville one time watching on Brian Eno.
Yeah, that'd be great company for Brian Eno.
Yeah,
I've talked to him several times because, you know, he's from our area, and I'd see him on tour. I'd see him, and every time I'd see that, I go talk to him because he's one of the nicest people in the world and very approachable. But yeah, I was listening to, I think it was a song, When You're 22, is what I think. I think that's what it was, but it was somewhere, and it was in the mid 90s, and it was just, it was a strange. It was a strange event, you know, and I thought I had mistaped it or something that had happened. But no, the whole song was there. I just have this blank period of time for about 6 or 7 minutes, whatever it was. Not very long, but long enough to be aware that, you know, I consciously heard the first two. I'm pretty sure it's When You're 22. The first like 2 or 3 notes. And then I was really confused and everything. And then at the very end of it, I heard the last trail off part of the song and was, you know, completely like, what, you know, thrown off. So, yeah, that was the it was weird. It's weird. And, you know, that's one of those things where when people say they've got missing time, I when they describe it that they just don't know what happened, you know. I understand that. And I understand that's, yeah, I'm like, yeah, that sounds right. That sounds legitimate. I believe that. So,
yeah.
What is it? From outer
space. They came from outer space.
That's great.
That's the answer right there.
Well, the thing I would, you know, that, and talking about follow up, it would probably, could be, possibly, you know, be fun to try to find a hypnotist and play that song, you know, start the song again. And while you're under hypnosis, and see if you could recreate that lost 6 minutes.
That's a great
idea. Using that as your spring.
That's a great idea.
Do it live.
Yeah. Exactly. No kidding, man. That's a great
idea.
That
would be awesome because I think this, you know, like Micah, we were talking about one time the concept of the frequency of fear. I think that there can be stimuli there can be a stimulus to trigger things. And that's and I think sometimes it can be music.
Yeah.
You know, you start thinking, and I guess it all depends on where you yourself are, you know, mentally and everything. But I mean, you know, for like Charles Manson to be triggered like he was by Helter Skelter, or you know, there was this one girl I knew that every time she listened to the acoustic version of Pinball Wizard, just something about the way Pete Townsend was playing, you know, his acoustic guitar and going at it made her want to commit suicide. You know, it's like
he wasn't that bad a guitar player.
No, he was a great guitarist, but it's just something was triggered in her brain when she would hear it, and she couldn't listen to that song because it put her in this blue funk and she wanted to kill herself.
Yeah.
So yeah, I wonder if some people have these receptors in their brain and they're triggered
absolutely
by certain notes or something. And that's where it would be interesting to see if you could recreate that.
Yeah.
I mean, I've listened to the song several times before because I immediately rewound the tape and listened to the whole thing again, you know, and it was all there. And so, yeah, so I've listened to it several times over the years, but also around that same time in that area that I was, I had seen at least twice in the same kind of a year or two span, several different, you know, lights in the sky kind of events and UFO stuff. And I had a friend who had a similar, you know, story, where he had missing time and he was going to school at the same place just about 4 or 5 years earlier. And, you know, same kind of general thing happened to him. And coming in the future, we've got another story of a friend who has some of the same elements around the same time, around the same area, all unconnected and unto each other. So,
where is the university? Where is the
No, it was in Southwestern Oklahoma State University in Weatherford, Oklahoma. It's, you know, just off of Route 66, old Route 66. And that's, in fact, Route 66 was the road, the back road at that time that I was taking that I had that, you know, missing time experience on. So,
Your kid's on Route 66?
Yeah. Yeah, you have to go back. Like I said, I think it was our sixth episode.
Yeah.
My friend Mark told his story, and he had told me the story prior to my experience, and I then had my experience, and always wanted to tell him about it, but never got around to it or never saw him because I hadn't seen him for, you know, like 20 years or whatever. And we finally got him to be a guest on the show there early on, and he told his story and I told him mine. That was, you know, a continuation kind of, you know, in the same vein of the similar events. And it's just, it's weird. And that's one of the things that actually prompted us to do this kind of a format, this kind of stories, this genre of podcast, because, you know,
it's a great concept you guys got for this podcast, your whole approach and everything to it. It's just a lot of very fun, relaxed kind of stuff, you know, fun.
That's what we're going for. So,
yeah.
Well, we're all trying to connect the dots.
Right.
But, you know, another thing is, you know, we're trying to connect the dots. And one thing we're trying to do here is we're trying to connect with people, you know, like, you know, because we all are on our phone all the time or we're online all the time. We're not connecting. We don't see each other. That's why we like using the video feed as well when we're talking, because then we can see your face and you can, Mike, you can laugh at my gawking reactions and stuff like that. You know, we experience it, you know, we connect like we're supposed to, you know?
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Right.
Good idea.
Yeah. No, it's been great so far. We've enjoyed it. So, and it just keeps getting better. Great guests like you guys. I mean, seriously, the guests make the show. It's just, we're there to ask questions and laugh and, you know, throw our two cents.
I'm hoping the two Marks from Weird New Jersey will start something like this, because there's a lot of us. I'm currently doing that. Whenever I get time off, I run up to New Jersey and I go to all the places that they talk about.
Cool. That's right.
and look for experiences.
Yeah.
And that's and one that I was recently up there to see the Devil's Tree, and it's interesting when the things actually happen.
Yeah.
You know, you're reading about it in the book and you're like, okay, somebody had a, you know, but whatever, you know, and then, but you go yourself and mm-hmm. it actually happens the way they describe it yeah. in the book. And
that's crazy.
And well, then you go.
Well, I think we need to take the opportunity right here, right now, while we've got you, to have you tell us about this devil tree and experience that you've had.
So we're looking for a little help from our friends. We need you, our loyal listeners, to help us spread the word about the What's Your Weird Story podcast. Just go to your current podcast provider, iTunes, Spotify, Stitcher, SoundCloud, Podbean, YouTube. We're just about everywhere. Hit the subscribe button, download the podcast, give us a thumbs up, hit the like button, give us the highest rating you can, and give us a review. The What's Your Weird Story podcast is a community effort. Without our friends and listeners, it wouldn't be possible to do what we do. So please help us out by spreading the word.
The Devil's Tree was cool because there's been two volumes of Weird New Jersey, and I'm a completist. I mean, if I get a book, I want to do everything in the book. You know, I start page one and go through, and so I reached the Devil's Tree, and there was get a couple of friends, some Jersey girls, and and we head out to the Devil's Tree, and one of the things that they were saying is that that in the past, someone going up to it, a black truck, a black Ford truck, would come up behind you like it was trying to push you off the road or something. Or this happened to one person anyway. And then it passed them, you know, and they realized this when they saw that by the tailgate that it was a black Ford. And, you know, and they had felt threatened that it was trying to run them off the road. And so when we go up to the tree and everything, we had there was no place to park except for on the side of the road. So we get off to the road, and right as we park on the off the road, we didn't notice it. You know, I'm driving. I didn't see anything in my rearview mirror. But right as we pull off the side of the road, this black truck passes by us, and I'm getting out, and then one of my friends, Nancy, she's getting out on the other side, and the truck passes by us, and we both look, because we know the story, we both look at each other like, oh, shit. I look at the tailgate, and sure enough, it's a Ford.
Wow. You know?
And the windows are tinted black. You can't see anything wow. in the inside of this truck.
Shit.
And so immediately we're like, whoa, you know. So then the truck, you know, it goes on. And then Nancy's like, I don't know about this. So we start walking towards the tree, and out of nowhere, I mean, this is like a summer day, and this isn't Florida, you know, this is Jersey. So out of nowhere, this rainstorm just comes up. I mean, this torrential rain, and just starts coming down on us, and we can't get to the tree. We had to turn around and run back to the car. So we're sitting in the car, and then the girl's like, well, I guess we're not going to be able to see the Devil's Tree. I'm like, I didn't come from, you know, I didn't drive 10 hours not see yeah. and get this close to the Devil's Tree and not have an experience. Yeah, you know, I'm going to get some bark off that tree. Yeah. So anyway, the storm lets up. You know, we wait about, you know, 20, 30 minutes, whatever. Storm lets up. We get out. We go up to the tree. And when we come up to the tree, we're standing around it. We're talking. We're taking pictures of ourselves around the tree and everything. And all of a sudden, and I could send this picture to you because it's strange. All of a sudden, this foam starts coming out of the tree. And
really?
We're like, one of the girls looks at it and she says, what is that? And we turn around and look at the tree, and this foam is just like coming out of the tree, like something you would see in some, you know, Roger Corman science fiction movie or something. And it's coming out. We're of course, taking pictures of it and everything.
Yeah,
we're like,
yeah.
That is so strange. You know, so of course, you know, we try to get close and smell it, see if it's, you know, it has any fragrance or smell to it. Nothing, you know, dumb or not, maybe I, you know, who cares about flesh eating bacteria when you're in the, you know, when you're in the heat of the moment. But yeah. You know, so a lot of men
make that mistake.
Yeah.
No kidding.
So I stick my fingers in the foam, you know, and I bring it up, I start. No smell, no, wow. You know, there's no feel, no texture to it, nothing. It might as well be ectoplasm, but there's nothing to it. And so there's these markings. I mean, it's like dirt all around this tree. And except for right at the base of the tree, there's just like this stone with these like lines etched all in it, you know, and it, which is strange within itself. But you can't, it doesn't look like anything other than it's just strange that there's this huge stone, you know, at the base of this tree where there's nothing else around but dirt. And then there's this tree. So there's a lot of legends. I mean, you can look it up and everything, but that was the thing. So when we're getting ready to leave, after we've had our Devil's Tree experience, you know, we get some of the bark, you know, we get the stuff that we feel like we can take with us and all this, we're getting ready to leave. And again, Nancy, one of the girls, because there's a legend about somebody had gone to the tree as a skeptic with some friends, and they had decided to take a leak on the tree, you know, in defiance of the devil. I said, idea. Oh, yeah, the devil's tree, right, you know, and take
I'm
a leak.
I'm not scared of the
I'm
tree.
Not scared. So I'm going to pee on this tree. You know, so then they leave, and immediately after leaving, they get a short, you know, ways down the road, and they wreck, you know. And so Nancy, she was saying, and she said, whatever you do, don't pee on the tree. So I'm like, well, no, I'm not going to do that, but I had my key with me. I said, but this is the devil's tree. My act of defiance is I went up there and put a cross in the tree in the bark. You know, I do that. And then, you know, Linda's like, I don't know if that's a good idea either. I mean, it's the devil's tree. You might not.
She has a lot of faith in Jesus.
Yeah. She's like, I don't know if the devil would want you, you know, like carving a cross on his tree.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
I'm like, oh, well, whatever. You know, but anyway, we get back in the car and we leave. And when you come to the end of the country road, you have to take a ramp back onto, I don't know if it's 22 or whatever road, but there's a major road that you have to take a ramp to get back onto. And you have to come up and then you go in there. So as I'm coming onto the ramp, it's kind of a curb, and I'm not speeding. I'm not doing anything. And all of a sudden the car goes into a skid, which is like, this isn't winter. Oh. This is the summer. There's nothing. And no reason, and all of a sudden, I go into this skid and almost hit the guardrail.
Whoa.
And the girls are both going, mm-hmm. You know, when I finally, because I lived in the mountains, so I'm used to mountain driving. So when you get ice, you immediately, you don't step on the brake. You know, you lift off of everything and let the car kind of.
What do you do when you hit Satan?
Yeah. What do you do when you hit Satan?
You lean into the curve?
And you don't know. But
Jesus,
you know,
take the wheel, Micah. Jesus, take the wheel.
When the car almost went into the side rail and I stopped, you know, the girls are like, what was that? You know, like, I don't know. And we were, all three of us were like, Petra, I was even afraid to even move for a little bit because it was such a pronounced skid.
Wow.
And I'm practically doing like, what? 5 miles per hour coming on this ramp because, you know, I'm trying to look at the traffic coming. So, yeah. You know, just going to run out in the middle of a 4-lane road and I'll go into the skid. So that was, and I was nervous for probably the next 2 or 3 miles thinking, you know, what the heck is going, you know, but that was my devil's tree experience.
Wow,
and that
man.
Was, and so those guys, you know, I just came back from Lakewood. They have what's called the D&L tree there. Not a whole lot happened there. There's, you know, this murder type of thing that happened at the tree, but that was nothing really happened there. As I found a pretty strange feather there. I don't know if feathers have a, you know, any type of a, you know, a significance, a symbolic thing. I took the feather, but, you know, just for the remembrance, but didn't get a feeling like, you know, no foam out of the tree or anything like that, at the devil's tree. But I got to tell you, I'd never seen anything, you know, like that. This,
wow.
It was literally like in Roger Corman film, like this foam just out of nowhere. I
and
mean,
you
like
have,
a weeping.
You said you got a
picture.
Send it, man.
Yeah, I don't know the link or how.
You need to check and see if somebody's done any chemical testing of that.
What's the story behind the Devil's Tree, though? Like, why is it called that? Is it like, I mean, there's a, you know, the legend of it.
You know, that's a good question. I think there was somebody. I think there was a hanging that took place there. Okay. It was the rock has been documented there as being a portal to hell.
Okay. Okay.
There's
a documented portal to hell.
Yeah. a spoken.
I lived in some.
Said this is.
It's all the Chamber of Commerce.
I lived in some towns that I think were probably a documented portal.
Yes. Well, that's what I had to say about Point Pleasant, West Virginia. How many? How many towns do you go to where on Main Street they have a giant statue of a monster on their Main Street? When you go to Point Pleasant, right in the middle of Main Street, you have this big statue of the Mothman.
A lot of strange high weirdness went on there in that time period. I've listened to several podcasts about that and about just, you know, stuff that went on that are associated with that. There are a lot of Men in Black stuff that went on there. Just some all sorts of crazy things there. Point
you know, this guy, I did a posting about it, and this guy contacted me from Florida, and he grew up in Point Pleasant when this was happening. He was like 12 or 13 years old when all of it was happening in Point Pleasant. And he contacted me, and the interesting thing is we get John Keel's take on all of it about the Man in Black and all this kind of stuff. And his thing was, he said, it wasn't anything like that living there. And I said, right. What do you mean by that? He said, you never heard about the Men in Black until, like, you know, X-Files and Will Smith and all that stuff. He said, there was none of that. He said, when we were growing up there, we didn't have any history to base any of this stuff on. Huh. You know, there was nothing. And I said, well, what was it to you then? He said, the Men in Black, he said, you got to remember the TNT, which was like a military dumping ground.
Right.
He said, that was right outside of town. And he said that at that time in the early 60s, everybody was worried about the Cold War.
Right.
He said, so when you had these weird guys show up in town, and he said they spoke with an accent. They didn't sound like they were from around there. It was a small community. Everybody basically knew each other. Yeah. He said, now these strangers are showing up, talking to people. He said, the thing that we were hearing and believing was that they were Russians.
Right.
He said, we didn't know anything about the Men in Black. He said, we thought they were Russians. I said, well, what about the Mothman itself? I said, you know, he said, John Keel created that. You know, he said, John Keel created the whole thing about the Mothman. I said, well, what did you guys think? He said, well, you got to understand. He said, Point Pleasant was built on an Indian battleground. He said, when the white man started moving into the fertile Ohio Valley area, he said the Indians, there was three tribes that were around there. I forget the names of them. But these three tribes didn't want all the white man in there on their fertile ground. They had such good, you know, soil. And right on the river. So they were trying to run the white man off. The white man said, I'm not going to, you know, go for that. So the three tribes combined, and they had this major battle with the white man. Davy Crockett was in on this fight, either he or Daniel Boone. I can't remember which now. But anyway, one of them was in this fight, and they slaughtered the Indians. So it was a major, massive slaughter.
Right.
And, you know, the white man won. And then they built a town on top of the battlefield, you know, where all these Indians were slaughtered. So at that time, the ones who were more superstitious in the town were believing that it was they had some Indian god that had the look of the Mothman. And they thought it was the Indian god that was coming back seeking revenge for the slaughter, that, you know, this time period to come back for this Indian god to come back and do this, because there was so much cattle being slaughtered. Mm-hmm. You know, that was happening. So then, I said, well, what were they saying in the churches and stuff like that? He said, well, there was in the TNT, which, you know, there was said to be like these satanic gatherings. So the preachers, we're talking about the early 60s now, the preachers were saying that it was Satan because of the red eyes.
The eyes
of the devil. Wow. So he said they did not, nobody thought about UFOs at that time. He said, no, you know, he said they were looking at things that people understood at that time.
Right.
He said it was the devil, the Russians, you know, this type of stuff. Nothing about UFOs. John Keel created the Mothman. He said they didn't know what to call it, you know. And he said the only thing that I said, what do you remember the most, being that you were like 12 or 13 at that time? He said the thing that I remember the most, he said, was that we had to.
We're about to run out on our battery here.
Okay.
Yeah. So.
Okay, man.
Yeah, we're not about to plug.
But anyway, that does kind of tie in with what. I was saying,
yeah, it does. I was going to mention that.
Ballet said, Still there?
Yeah,
we're still here.
Yeah. The valet said about how people, we know how they were interpreting this phenomena that Gary's talking about. Mm-hmm. You know, they didn't think of it in terms of technology, mm-hmm. UFOs, that sort of thing. They were seeing it through a whole different lens. So, you know, what is the truth behind it? You know, again, it could very well be something far more occultic than, you know, what fits the palette of a technological age.
Right.
You know.
Right. Right. But, no, that's fascinating.
Yeah. But our Barry is about to go. We need to kind of go anyway.
Okay, man. Nice to meet you guys. Thank you guys for taking time.
Yeah, a lot of fun.
Thanks again.
I was going to mention that my book is out that you were mentioned in the introduction.
Yep.
It's out in print now.
Oh, great.
And, so I don't know if you ever thought you would see yourself in the context of a essay on Oscar Wilde and Dorian Gray. But the book is Dorian Gray, Darker Shades.
Yep.
And I did the introductory essay and I have a novella in it called Portrait of a Lady. It's the first anthology dedicated to new adventures of Dorian Gray in over 100 years of that character's existence, believe it or not.
Nice.
Yeah. And
Micah also wrote a really awesome, really cool graphic novel, Heaven's War. And it give us a little bit about that real quick, Micah, before we leave.
Well, it's the Oxford Inklings, C.S. Lewis, J.R. Tolkien, up against actually sort of the wingman for Charles Williams, a lesser known writer, but a more eccentric one with sort of cultic tie-ins. And they're pitted against Aleister Crowley, trying to find an entrance way into the kingdom of the air, where angels and fallen angels battle to shape the destiny of the nations. And Crowley wants to upset it. And, of course, they're there for the cause of the light. It ties into some of the same backstory of the Da Vinci Code. Okay. It's a historic fantasy set in Le Chateau, France, where that bizarre church is. Art by Michael Gatiss, Marvel Comics artist, most known probably for Jessica Jones, that the Netflix series is based on. Cool. Yeah.
Cool.
It's really cool. Really cool graphic novel.
Thank you. Yeah. It's just still out there. But the latest thing is my prose novella. And I'm also getting a website going up now, author website. Yeah.
Great.
Excellent. Excellent. Yeah. Well, thanks again, guys. We know your battery life is going to cut out here, and
at some point.
Hey guys, don't forget to follow us on all of our social media platforms. We're very 21st century. We're on Instagram at What's Your Weird Story? That's WATSYER Weird Story. We're at Twitter. We're at What's Your Weird. We got a Facebook page. It's the What's Your Weird Story podcast Facebook page. Just remember that our your is your because we're folksy. And we also have a www.whatsyourweirdstory.com. That's www.whatsyourweirdstory.com. That's for all of your social media platforms. And those are ways you can contact us and set up an interview if you want to be part of the show. So look us up. All right. Well, hey, Gary, Micah, thanks again for being on. It's too bad that the battery on your phone ran out there because we know we could talk to you guys for hours.
Mm-hmm, definitely.
And I know, Barry, you mentioned how you were very interested in this Devil's Tree.
Yeah.
We've got some photos that Gary sent to us, so we're going to have those up on the Instagram and on the Facebook page. But I know you said you looked up the Devil's Tree. So give us some knowledge, man.
Yeah, man. This is from Wikipedia. This is the Devil's Tree in New Jersey. And after we had talked to those guys, I was just kind of curious about it. So since it was such a public thing, I went and checked it out. So anyway, from Wikipedia, it says the Devil's Tree is a solitary oak tree with some dead limbs growing in an undeveloped field on Mountain Road in Martinsville section of Barnards Township in Somerset County, New Jersey. Local legend suggests the tree is cursed. Those who damage or disrespect the tree, usually by urinating on it or making disparaging remarks, which that's what Michael was talking about there, or Gary was talking about.
Yeah.
Will soon thereafter come to some sort of harm, often in the form of a car accident or a major breakdown as they leave. Again, Gary said that he had some car issues.
Yep.
And then it talks about the various legends. So here's what it says. It says, a common claim is in that Barnards Township was one of the central headquarters for the Ku Klux Klan in New Jersey, and that the tree had been used to lynch African Americans and rebellious slaves since colonial times, because we were curious about what sparked this whole thing. Another claim is that a farmer hanged himself from the tree after killing his family, and that anyone trying to cut the tree down will come to an untimely end. Other legends surrounding the tree allege that the visitors who get too close to the tree will get chased by a black Ford pickup truck. Isn't that crazy, huh?
That is exactly what he said.
Yep. So after you get chased by the truck, it says that it will disappear at some point.
That is what happened.
I know. Or that who touches the tree will find that their hands have turned black if they try to eat at a restaurant, which... You know, he didn't say anything about that. But anyway, I just thought that was interesting. And maybe, you know, if you guys are interested in that, you can go to Wikipedia, take a look. I'm sure there's other stuff on the web about that. But those guys, that was like a quick fire of like just so much information and so many stories.
Yeah. Like, I don't even think that I'm going to have enough hashtags to put on this particular episode to cover all the ground.
That
we've got here,
from
Montauk to the Devil's Tree to Haunted House to the Cult of the Blue Flame.
Yeah, man. Yeah, that was crazy, man. I still wonder about who burned that damn house down, if it were those people, you know.
What were they doing out there?
I don't know. It's just crazy. Crazy, man.
Well, shoot, dude. Well, that was... Thanks. Again, thanks a lot, guys. And I just wanted, you know, to give a shout-out to Micah. Again, he's a writer. And he wrote a really cool graphic novel called Heaven's War, and it's really cool. It's got great art, and he talked about it, and it's really a cool book, especially if you like alternate history kind of things.
Okay.
But definitely check that out. Image Comics made it. I think it just was put back into printing a year or two ago for, like, its 10th or 15th anniversary.
Awesome.
Really cool. And Micah also has a website. It is Minor Prophet Press. That's MinorProfitPress.com. And he's got some other stuff up there. You can check it out there. And it's cool stuff, you know. And that's, you know, one of the things that we're fortunate about is the creative people that we know who have come on to share their stories. And so if nothing else, you know, we want to help our friends out for helping us out.
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know. Absolutely. Expose some people to some folks that are out there doing some really great work, you know?
Yeah.
And if you can, support, you know, those guys. And I'd love to have them back. I mean, you know, get those guys back and share some more stories. So
definitely. Well, all right. Well, hey, everybody, thanks for sticking with us into this new year. This is our second episode of the new year. I think this is episode 20. I should know off the top of my head, but, you know, hey, remember, we're always looking for people to interview, and I guess we call it an interview. We don't have a better word for it, but you guys know it's not an interview. It's just hanging out and talking.
Yeah.
And it's a lot of fun, and we have a blast, and everybody seems to be having a blast, you know, because we got more people coming back. We have more return guests, so, and friends, what really they are. So thanks for listening. Barry, anything else you got?
Just have a good 2019, you know, stay the path, keep positive, keep improving. That's it.
As always, if you have a weird story, we want to hear it.
If you have a lot of them, we want to hear them all.
We can't do this podcast without your invaluable contributions.
Whether it's sharing your stories,
listening,
rating,
and spreading the word about the podcast. Thanks for listening. Till next time, be safe.
Be weird.
The stories presented on the What's Your Weird Story podcast are, to our knowledge, true experiences that our guests have had. We can't take the time to research all claims made, and besides, it's just not as fun.